Thank you, my brother. This few months, these sessions are going to be much different than what we have done the last 2 or 3 years, which are primarily a big group where I talk and, you know, you listen. These, I ask our brother to focus on people who are teachers, especially Sunday school teaching. And I want us to have much more interaction of discussing situations and not just so much of lecture. Now, this afternoon, I have several things that I want to go over. However, one of the things I would like to do is to get from you. How many of you teach a Sunday school class? Okay. Especially from those of you who teach a Sunday school class, or how many of you who did not raise your hand teach something else in a school, or you're a teacher actively somehow. Okay, very good. All right. For those of you who teach, I would like for you to answer two questions for me, if you could, in just a few words. One is, what is your greatest joy in teaching? What is it about teaching that brings you the most joy? And second, what do you find is the biggest challenge for you in teaching what you currently teach? Now, please understand before you answer, I am not promising that next time I will come and say, here is the solution to your challenge. But at least it will give me some idea. Here are the things that we need to be looking at. So who would like to volunteer to be the first to tell me what you teach, what age group you teach, what your biggest joy as a teacher is, and what your biggest challenge as a teacher is? All right, we'll start from the back and work forward then.
I'm actually an SI leader at Palm Beach State College. So, and I specialize in tutoring math. Okay. So, so that's the subject that I teach in mostly. And then the age group that I'm teaching is pretty much I would say between ages you know, like 17 and 18, okay, like just out of high school, up through retirement age.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, and I would say that the biggest joy that I get is I like it. I like to see students. The biggest joy that I get is building the students up. I would say the biggest challenge is helping them meet the challenges that they face in their math classes.
Okay. All right. So yours is very much individualized, focused. Okay. Very good. Yeah. Next, working our way up. Who else is a teacher? I'm coming to the front, but it'll simplify. Anyone on the next row is a teacher? Who's a teacher? Right here. Okay. Can you answer? Or is our brother here? Aren't you? I don't want to miss anybody.
Okay. Do I need to stand up?
No, you don't have to stand up.
I'm a teacher in college. I taught mathematics for more than 25 years.
Okay. All right.
I teach upper elementary Sunday school.
Okay.
And my greatest joy is to see children really get,
thank you,
understand the Bible concepts. And sometimes I feel that they really got it in the simplified form. When they really understand, I think they understand it better than adults.
Okay,
and in very simple words, they do that and give me great joy to that.
Good.
My challenge is to keep them relevant and engaged. I mean, they're talking and all that, but you know, finding, connecting. And I wish there are more videos or something else just to break the monotony of just teaching or talking. Some other medium of conveying the message, and that part of thing is keeping them engaged.
Okay, good. All right. That's something we can talk about sometime this spring, what resources there are. Good. Okay. Next. Yes. Here we are, brother.
The biggest joy, as far as I am concerned, is to see the student grow over time. Somebody else has alluded to,
mm-hmm,
to build up the student. That's the biggest joy.
Okay.
The biggest challenge is to keep the student interested, not to make the student fall into sleep.
Okay.
And I think that the common thread of a teacher is that they just want to teach. They don't care as much whether the student learned or not. So they just keep talking where students fall into sleep. So I think that's also one of the biggest challenges.
Okay.
Keep the student interested and engaged.
Good. Next month, I want to start through 7 laws of the teacher from Howard Hendricks. And one of those, if the student has not learned, you have not taught. And that seems very simple, but we often forget that. And teachers will say, I taught it. If they didn't learn it, that's their fault. If they didn't learn it, I can't really say, I taught it. Okay, good. Thank you. That's very good, both the joy and the challenge. Who else? Who all teaches a Sunday school class? What do you teach? Okay.
Pharmacy.
Okay. All right. Who are our other Sunday school teachers? Yes, sister. What do you teach?
I teach preschool.
I have great admiration. I could never do that. For one thing, all the little children are afraid of me. I don't know why.
And they graduate, like they are reached 5 years old, they go to her class. So she's going to enjoy that, you know.
Okay.
But basically, when I hear the kids can understand something what I'm talking about and they can answer my question, that's my biggest joy. I said, wow, they got it. But I do have a lot of challenges in that class because their age. I'm not quite sure. And their age. I never learned about children's psychology. So in their age, so how much they can learn and what level they can learn. The books, you know, the teaching books, the material we're using, I think it's a little bit too difficult for them.
Okay.
It's not really suit their age.
Okay.
So sometimes, especially when you have like 90% of boys in this classroom, they really don't know what you're talking about, you know. So another challenge is how to make the boys sit down. They are jumping around all the time. You know, I do not have a lot of a way to make them sit down.
Okay. Let's talk about that just for a moment, even though that's not really where we're headed today. That's a good observation. I once asked a teacher, I should tell you background is this, both because of what we're going to talk about and also how I'm going to do this. I seem to have done something wrong here. I am ringing. I was principal of a K-12 school in Hope Sound for 8 years and loved it very much. I often think that was maybe the happiest job I have ever had. I enjoyed it very much because I really enjoy teachers, and one of the things I enjoyed more than anything in that job was to simply go in classrooms and sit down and listen to teachers and watch them and then talk to them about the teaching. And one day I was watching a teacher who was really struggling. And when I met with her at the end of the day, I said, I think I can help your problem, because she was very frustrated. And she said, well, what is it? I said, we need to have a rule in your class. You are not allowed to be a boy. It's against the rules to be a boy, and that will solve your problems. And she looked very quizzical, and she said, but some of them are boys. I said, yes, but that it isn't working. And she said, well, what do you mean? I said, when a boy in your class acts like a boy, it frustrates you very much. Oh. I said, sometimes you are punishing them for being a boy. And I said, it really, you know, our school is not a girl's school, so we really cannot have a rule that says no boys in this grade. Yeah, I understand that. And we began to talk then about some of the characteristics of boys, because sometimes we simply expect everyone to act the same. And when boys act like boys act, we find it difficult. And that's a good challenge that we will, I hope we can talk about that. Okay, someone else. What are some other challenges you face? Today, I'm just kind of wanting to get information, and then we'll talk about some of these things as we go. All right, sister?
I stuck with my two boys for so many years, even don't know what to expect.
Yeah, just sometimes like I teach her boys piano. I need to punish them for being boys.
Yeah, just like how you can see, like it's one thing frustrates me, like you, because that's my children. You try to tell them something, they just like roll their eyes, and you ask them, they say, I know, before you even tell them anything, they always say, I know. I said, I even don't tell you what I'm going to talk, and they don't pay attention. And it's really frustrating, you know, like because the mom and the children relationship, it's hard to be a teacher. I don't know how much they learn, just like all the time we are frustrated, they are frustrated, at least I'm frustrated.
Let me ask you a question. When you are going to tell them something and they say, I already know before you say it, if you ask them, what was I going to say, would they get it right?
No.
No?
I don't know what I'm going to talk about. And then they say they know when we do the practice and they miss us and see, you don't know what you are doing. And my little one will say, you are bad. You know, I help him, but he's still whining. He said, because I cracked him. I said, that's a teacher for. He, you know, you teach him, you know him.
Okay, all right. Do you find that sometimes the students or your children do already know what it is you're going to say? Because we say it so many times. What is that called? Nagging. How many of you like to be nagged? Anybody here enjoy being nagged? No? How many here find that you nag? Okay, we have some honest people raising their hands. No one raised their hands that they like to be nagged, and yet some of us raise our hands that we nag. Do you see a problem? That's the problem. We don't consider it nagging, do we? But would we consider it nagging if someone else was saying it to us? Yes. One of the things as teachers, we have to find, how do we have a framework to deal with some things without nagging? And part of that is, how many, and I think this is probably, and we're not going to be dealing with parent issues because I am not an expert on parenting. I have two children. Once you've had children, you can never be an expert on parenting. It destroys you. You have to stop that. You know, before I became a parent, I could talk to you about it, but now I can't. Yes, okay, so you have someone. Good, all right. So we're not going to deal with that in here, but how many of you find that there is a temptation to just go over the same things and you already know they're really not going to listen to you, right? But you keep saying it. Why do you keep saying it? Hope. Hope it's different, okay. You know, one of the definitions of insanity is to keep doing the same things expecting a different result, right? That is insanity. Do we have any insane teachers or parents here? We keep doing the same thing, expecting a different result. I can almost promise you that if it didn't work 8 times, it's not going to work the 9th time. And yet, as teachers, we fall into the trap of just doing it over and over and over. And whether we're going to call it insanity or if we're going to be kind and call it hopefulness, it's not going to change, right? Think for a moment about discipline. What are your options? What are your options if a student is causing trouble in your class? What's all of the things that you could possibly do in response? Someone is talking and they won't stop. What can you do?
Give students an F.
You can give them an F, okay?
Make them busy.
You can make them busy.
Have them talk to you after class.
Send him to the principal office. Other things you could do?
Be quiet, and I don't talk, let them talk.
Okay, you could stop talking until they quit, okay? There are other things you could do. I mean, they're not good things, but you could do. You can yell at them, can't you?
Yes.
Okay. I'm not saying good things. I'm just saying, what are all the things you could possibly do? What else?
Time out.
Look at him. Okay, all right.
Motivate him by making him lead them.
Okay, give him some responsibility. Good. Now, let me ask you this. Any of the ideas that we shared will never work. Any of the ideas that we listed, we know, would never, ever work. No? Okay. Okay, all right. Now let me ask you this question. Any of the things that we listed, do you know will work every single time in every situation? No. So what does that mean about your discipline? And this comes back to what our sister was saying about nagging and repeating. Huh? Maybe, but none of these things will work every time, right? So if I consistently use something that won't work in this situation, have I accomplished anything? So maybe I need to be inconsistent in this particular what I'm saying. None of these things will work in every situation. Would you agree? So what do you have to do as a teacher or as a parent? You have to be flexible and creative enough to do this and then do this. And then do this. You see, nagging means they already know what's coming, right? I think the truth is a lot of times when our kids would say, I already know what you're going to say. The truth is they already know what we're going to say because we've kind of just keep falling into that rut. There has to be, it seems to me as teachers, we have to have the flexibility and creativity that we do something and when it no longer works, we change. I'll give you an example. And if I repeat some examples, please forgive me. Because I don't have a good memory and so I won't remember what I said. Pardon? Oh, okay. All right. One of the teachers that I have learned so much from, she is just absolutely a superb teacher. And I would go in her classroom and watch, and every time I would watch her, I would learn something. And there was a boy in the class who I have to be careful because I know y'all are close enough to Hope Sound that you could know some people, and so I have to disguise the stories. But this boy had been in school for a few years, and every year he spent, you know, a good bit of time in my office. I thought about maybe just setting up a little table for him where, you know, he could work there and be comfortable. Get him a little office chair and, you know, have it set up for him. And he got to this teacher's class, and it got to about October, and he hadn't been to my office, and so I thought maybe she had murdered him and stuck his body under a desk somewhere, you know, because he'd never got that far before. And I walk into classroom one day, and he is in the back of the room, so, you know, turn everything around. He's in the back of the room, and there is duct tape, gray duct tape, and he is just walking. She's teaching. He's walking. Gets to the end of the duct tape. Gets to the end of the duct tape, back and forth. So after class, I said, was Michael in trouble? No. Were you punishing him? No. I said, what was he doing? She said, Michael has trouble focusing. He needs to be doing something. And so I put the duct tape and told him anytime he thinks that he's going to get in trouble, he can go back there, and as long as he will listen to me, he can just walk back and forth on the duct tape. And she said, he listens. And he was a smart boy, by the way. He still gets the stuff, and he just walks back and forth. So sure enough, for the next 6 weeks, I would go in, and there was the duct tape. And, you know, sometimes he would be in his chair, and sometimes he would be walking. I walked in one day, and there's no duct tape. So at the end of the day, I saw her. I said, what happened to the duct tape? She said, I took it up. Why? And she said something very wise. She said, it's not working anymore. Michael has gotten used to it. And so now that isn't working. So what was she doing? She found another way to let him work out his energy. And I have thought about that many times because, number one, many of us, what would be our solution for Michael always wanting to fidget and do stuff in class? Stop it, Michael. Stop it, Michael. Michael, I said, stop it. The only variation would be if his name was first or second in the phrase, right? It would be very fair for him to say, I already know what you're going to say, right? And would it work? No. Okay. So number one, she had the creativity to look at what is the problem. The problem is not that Michael is a rebel who wants to cause trouble by fidgeting. The problem is Michael is full of energy and activity. And sitting in a desk is painful to him, and he needs some solution. So she was creative enough to look at the problem and find a solution. But second, she was flexible enough that 6 weeks later she could say, okay, that's not working now. Let's do something else. And she could approach it and find another solution. Teaching looks at that. Otherwise, it really does become nagging. Because we end up just over and over and over. The same problem, same solution. I found often with teachers, they punished themselves. Because if a student is active and getting into trouble, what is the first thing that many teachers do to punish them? Take away recess. Now, if a child has too much energy and they are getting in trouble because they just are full of energy, and your solution is to make them sit for 30 minutes during recess, who is going to suffer the results? The teacher. Because now they're going to be worse. Okay, Nagy, any other challenges? I don't want to spend the whole time here today, but any other challenges or joys? I don't remember who all raised their hand. Yes. Children's source, okay.
Yes. At the beginning, I really feel I dislike it because the children, I be nice to them, but they doesn't give me back the knife.
Okay.
They kind of just don't give a shit. So, weird, and then they don't say it. At the beginning, I feel so bad. And then I feel, oh my God, I really don't want this anymore. But one day when I see a sister in Shuman, she being very restrict to them, and they listen. And then now I see, okay, my knife doesn't work. So I have to be restrict to them, and then also coming back to be nice to them. And then I think it works better.
Okay.
But now it's still noisy, you know, but it seems like little children, I say, this is their, you know, because their age.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel a little bit more enjoy that, and I feel like I can continue. But it's a learning experience because I have no kids, but I see those kids now. I learned a little bit more of enjoy being around them.
Okay.
But I think I need more because now they're still noisy sometimes.
Okay.
Sorry, I just something to say. Please, if possible, use the speaker because we're recording. If you don't use it, we're not going to record it. So we don't know what the question is.
Okay.
And also have a translator. She will now hear what you say without this microphone.
Okay.
So please use it as possible.
Okay, we'll try to keep it floating around. Very good, and our sister has made an observation that is very important. One wonderful teacher says this, it's always easier to get easier. In other words, if you are this strict, you can always back down to being this strict, right? It is very, very difficult to start here and get more strict. You agree? You find that with your children? Mrs. Palm, who I know, I have been hesitant about agreeing to do this topic because I think she taught down here. You all have seen the world's greatest teacher. Why do you need me to even talk about this? But she used to say to the academy teachers, and she was exaggerating, I know that, but she used to say, never smile until Thanksgiving. And her point was, start with high demands. Then as you know the students and you get accustomed to them, you can begin to relax because now they respect you and they follow your demands. But if your first step, I somewhere we'll talk about, the only teacher I've ever had as a teacher, I mean, the only person who ever worked for me as a teacher who I saw get punched in the nose, I didn't watch it, but it happened to one of the teachers in my school, was a man who had graduated and he was going to teach junior high. This was not at Homestown. He was going to teach junior high. And he said to me, and I should have been smarter. Now I would know, but back then I didn't. He said, I really want to be a friend to these junior high boys and girls. Well, that's good, you know. So he decided to be a friend from day one. You can imagine the chaos. Until the day came when he comes to my office, I had tried to tell him, you know, Tony, you've got to have discipline. You've got to get control. No, if they know I love them and I like them, they're going to like me and everything's going to be fine. So I'm sitting in my office one day and he comes to my door, and he's got a handkerchief held to his nose, and it's bleeding. And I said, what's wrong? He said, one of the students punched me in the nose. And I started to laugh, and he didn't think it was funny. And he says, you're the principal, why are you laughing? I said, you have finally got what you want. What? I said, you wanted to be their friend. Yeah. Junior high kids punch each other in the nose. You're their friend. You should be thrilled. After he settled down, he come back. He said, okay, I get your point. I made a mistake. Where do we go from here? You're right. If you get their respect, if you earn their respect, then you can move from there much easier. If you start with, I want this to be the most fun that they've ever had, you may find chaos. And you will end up not enjoying it. And by and large, if you're not enjoying the class that you're teaching, do you think the students will? Usually not. They can tell. Yes, they can tell. I sometimes will say to my classes, it doesn't matter to me if you have fun in here, I want to have fun in here. If I go home happy, then I'll be happy. So that means you have to do it my way. Because if you do what I ask you to and you learn and succeed, then I'll go home happy. Whether you go home happy is up to you. But my point is this. I need to enjoy teaching. And the way I'm going to enjoy teaching is if they're learning and we're gaining something, we're making progress. But here's the ironic thing. If that's my goal, is learning, and I want them to learn and progress, you know what happens to them as students? They learn, but they also enjoy it. Because don't students, by and large, enjoy learning, getting better at something? If my number one goal is for them to have fun, but they aren't learning anything, at some point, they're going to get bored. They're not going to enjoy it.
So I need to make sure that they are learning and accomplishing something. Okay, well, thank you for these, and if there's more, we'll talk about them some more later. Let's move to Luke chapter 6. Luke chapter 6. And I wanted to say today, a couple of you have mentioned that you prayed for my trip to Nigeria. Thank you very much. God helped us during that trip. And I would ask that you continue to pray for the Christians in Nigeria. They are under, many of them, in great danger and serving God under some very difficult circumstances because of what's called Boko Haram there, a very radical Islamic group. And several of the pastors who were in the class had had members who had been brutally murdered by these people and really at great risk. I talked one day to an 18-year-old boy who is studying to be a pastor, and I said, what is motivating you to be a pastor? He's going back to this area, and he told me that three of his friends who are pastors had been killed, and he said, God wants me to replace one of them. And so there are Christians who are very committed and serving God in very difficult circumstances. And I would ask that you continue to pray for them, that God will give them strength and wisdom. Luke chapter 6, verse 40 is one of my favorite verses about teaching. A disciple is not above his teacher, but everyone, when he is fully trained, will be like his teacher. Quite a few years ago now, I was teaching, and at that point I was teaching primarily piano, and I had a very talented little girl. She happened to be a Chinese girl, and she was a very talented little girl, and one day, her older sister came to me. Her older sister was also my student, but was in college. And her older sister came to me and said, "You need to sit up straight, Dr. McElwain." "Huh? When you play the piano, you need to sit up straight." Well, I really didn't think it was any of her business to be telling me how I ought to sit when I play the piano. And I looked at her and I said, "What are you talking about?" She said, "My sister, who was only, I think, 7 or 8, is slouching when she plays the piano, and she's going to have bad posture, and it's your fault." I said, "It's not my fault. I've never told your sister she ought to slouch when she plays. In fact, I said, I told her she should sit up straight." And she said, "Yes, you told her she should sit up straight, but then you play for her, and you sit there like this. And so she comes home to practice, and she wants to be like you. So she sits there like this, and my sister is going to have a crooked back, and it's your fault." What was she saying? What did I do? Example, yes. She was saying to me, everyone, when he is fully trained, will be like his teacher. Something that I never thought about, and certainly was not what I was trying to teach, was communicating to this little girl, apparently better than the things I was saying to her. Because I was saying to her the opposite. But what she was learning was from my example. Jesus said, a disciple, when he is fully trained, will be like his teacher. As Sunday school teachers, as Christians who are teachers, in a very real sense, you are modeling for your students what they will become. One of the verses in Scripture that startles me every time I'm reading through the Bible and come to this is in 1 Corinthians when Paul says to them, "Follow me as I follow Christ." He is saying to these Corinthian Christians who struggle with many, many different things, he he gives them advice. He says, do this, do this, do this. Don't do this, don't do this, don't do that. And finally he says, okay, let me just put it like this. You copy me. I'm copying Christ. And you copy me, and you'll be okay. How many of you think it would be safe to say, you follow me, and you'll be okay? Isn't that kind of frightening? It is to me. I'm never going to say that to my students. You just do the way I do and you'll be okay. However, the fact is, Luke 6:40, the students are going to be like you. They are going to copy you. And so we must be what we want our students to become. And how we teach becomes very important, because as a Christian who is a teacher, and especially as a Sunday school teacher, you know, if students are in class at school and they're in a math, someone said a math teacher, okay, I shouldn't pick math then, should I? I should pick any history teachers here? Okay. They're in a history class and they don't like the class. The worst is they won't like history, right? Which is too bad. That's really unfortunate that they will miss out the joy of such a wonderful subject. But at least it's just history that will kind of get the blame. Do you understand that if they come to Sunday school and don't like Sunday school, you see the problem? Who gets the blame on that one? Yeah, they don't like God's subject. They don't want to go study about him. To me, that's a heavy responsibility for those of us who teach and who represent Christ in our teaching, because we really are representing to them who Christ is. And so how we teach becomes very important. Now, today I want to spend our time on three areas that as teachers we can work on, because one of the important principles for us is this, I think. The only variable, and I didn't put this up there and I should have, so maybe you can jot this down. The only variable that a teacher can control in the classroom is what? The teacher. Right? I used to walk into the teacher's lounge. And sometimes I would hear, if only I could get so-and-so moved out of my classroom. If only it was cooler in the classroom. If only we had better lights. If only this, or that, or the other. If only their parents would send pencils with them. If only their parents would feed them breakfast before they came. But the truth is, and I sometimes would say to the teachers, there's only one thing that you really can control in the classroom, and that is you. And so the first question I have to ask if I am frustrated with my class, the first question I have to ask if I'm not enjoying teaching is, what can I do? Because what I would like to do is fix all of them, right? But I can't. This year, I'll tell you a little bit probably this year about Nigeria, because I just came back from there. This was the third year in a row I had gone to teach there. And I did not enjoy the first year I did not enjoy at all. I wasn't going to go back. And then I thought maybe it was just me, and I felt like the Lord wanted me to go back. And so I went back a second year. And I was very unhappy with the class. I didn't enjoy the teaching. I didn't enjoy the students. They were good people. I knew that. They were pastors. And yet, day after day, I would go back to my room angry. And I got on the plane the last trip, and I said, Lord, I'm not going back. You should never tell the Lord that. Not good. Because he said, yes, you will. And before I went this time, I realized something has to change. You see, I was unhappy because it's hot. And so the classroom is, we had 40 students in a tiny little room. It's hot, it's sweaty. Never one day did the electric work all day, so I would prepare the PowerPoints and then I couldn't use them. And their culture is different, and they would talk and, you know, texting and cell phones while I'm trying to teach, and I was just so frustrated. And before I went this year, I remembered the only thing I can control is what? Me. I can't control the electric in Nigeria. Apparently no one can. I can't control the air conditioning. And I can't control all these other things, but I can control them. And so the first day of class, I said to them, I want to be happy when I finish this class. Not happy I'm leaving, but happy I was here. At the end of the days, I want to walk to my room thinking, wow, that was a good class today. I had a good time. And so all of you may be miserable these 2 weeks, but I'm going to be happy. And the reason I'm going to be happy is we are going to get a lot done. And if your cell phone rings, I am just going to take it, and I'm going to give it to the president and tell him that you can pick it up when the class is over, because it doesn't make me happy when you're talking on your phone in my class. And I want to be happy. It doesn't matter if you're happy or not. And one of them looked at me and said, are you serious? And I said, yes, because I want to be happy. I gave them some clear guidelines. I probably have never enjoyed teaching as much as those 2 weeks of class. We got a lot done. They were enthusiastic about the subject. They cooperated with me. They elected someone who was in charge of handling all the problems. And if someone started to talk, David, who sat right up here, he would nail them. I didn't have to. And they enjoyed the class. And when we got done, they said, can you come back and let's do this again? Why? Because I finally figured out, I'm a slow learner, and it took me 3 years, that the only variable I could control was what? Me. And so who was responsible to make sure this class works? Me. Because they are good people, and they are pastors and good people, but it is natural that you do how much? What you have to. Right? And so it was my responsibility to make sure we didn't do that. As a teacher, you are the one that must make sure the class works. So I want to talk today about three areas that I think are crucial to teaching. And then over the next couple of months, we're going to talk about some guidelines for how we teach and how we model this. But let's start today with three things that we must do. And the first one is, good teaching requires good planning. If you don't know what you're going to accomplish in a class, the students will decide for you. And the students probably will not make the same decision you would have made. Now, you don't have to raise your hands on this. But have any of you ever walked into a class unprepared and thought, you know, I'm not ready for this, but I think I can fake it and get through the hour? Anybody want to raise your hand as a testimony that, yes, you've done that before? How did it go? Not very well. Students can quickly figure out if we don't know what we're doing, right? I used to enjoy watching the student teachers as they would start to begin. And for many of them, one of the biggest problems they would have their first week or two was they wouldn't have enough material ready. They thought they did, but they didn't. And so they run out of stuff 20 minutes before the class is done. And now what do we do? And if students don't have something to do, what happens? They make trouble. And as teachers, we get frustrated with them, right? And we get mad. But whose fault is it? What's the only thing we can control? Ourselves. If I have a 55-minute class, I better have an hour and 15 minutes worth of material. so that I am sure that I have enough to keep the students busy, because if they're not busy, they're going to get in trouble. Now, as Sunday school teachers, you have a kind of a unique challenge, because you can't send them to the principal's office, and you probably can't march them into the pastor every time they do something. And so that means more of the responsibility for managing the class falls on you. I assume that's the way it is here, right? You don't have a principal of the Sunday school. And so you're planning. For Sunday school teachers, I think there is a danger because they give us these Sunday school books. In fact, someone mentioned the curriculum already. And we can come to rely on those and think, okay, all I have to do is walk in and I've got the book and now all I've got to do is just read this. If you walk in that room and you're not prepared, that Sunday school book is not going to rescue you. The Sunday school book gives you some material, but who has to move it from that book to five-year-old level? That book to pre-K level? That book to whatever level you're teaching? You've got to do that preparation. I always, for school teachers, and I really think that this can be adapted to Sunday school, but for the classroom teachers, I always ask them to show me three things as a teacher. One was their objectives, and that is, what will the student learn? Not what lesson are we covering, not Sunday school lesson 13, not what pages, but what is the purpose for what I'm going to teach today? What is it that I'm trying to accomplish? Why is it important? If I don't cover this, or more important, let me say it differently, if the students don't understand what I'm doing today, what will they have missed? Because you see, if there's really no answer to that, I could just dismiss them and there would be no loss, right? If I'm just doing it because, well, there's a page. I once had a teacher come in and she was very frustrated because she wasn't going to get to the end of her book by the end of the year. And she felt, I need to get through my book. And so I sat down with her and we started to look through the book. I said, what's the purpose of this page? I don't know. It doesn't make any sense to me. I said, so there's nothing here you're wanting to teach them? No. I said, well, let's rip it out. What about this? I don't. When we got done, she had no trouble to get through everything. So about 6 months later, I was at a teacher's convention and the publisher for that textbook was there. And so I thought, I want to find out something. So I went to him and I said, in your book, we got a copy of it. I said, my teacher tells me there's no point at all in this page. And there's no point in this page. And he said, she's right. He said, we put those in case the teachers are having trouble filling up the year. It'll give them more to do. But really, that stuff doesn't matter at all. And that confirmed for me this. If there's really no point in it, I don't need to do it. I need to know, what will they learn? So let's say you're teaching a lesson on Proverbs 1. Everyone knows Proverbs 1, right? Turn to it if you're not sure what Proverbs 1 is about. What is the subject of Proverbs 1? You just skim through that page, that chapter, you're going to see it's a lot about wisdom, 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 how to be wise, what is a wise person, what is a fool, what does a wise person do? Now, if you're teaching a Sunday school lesson on that, what is the objective you want to get across? I want them to know, what is wisdom? What does it mean to be a wise person? Now, you said you teach what grade? What level? Upper elementary. How is a upper elementary student going to understand this? What is wisdom? Oh, yes, I'm sorry, I forgot. That's my fault. I didn't give you a chance.
I'm
STEM, I asked them what the idea is at their level. What do you think it is? And they, some of them, they see it in their own words, but they come close.
So okay, all right.
And then I have others help to fill in the blanks.
Okay,
they missed.
All right. So maybe your objective for this lesson would be simply to help them to understand what wisdom means and to evaluate their life. Am I a wise person? Am I following in the path of wisdom? You want them to know the objective, then you want to look at your method. How are you going to teach this? Now, one of you mentioned about you find that the curriculum doesn't speak at the level of your students. Who was that? What level was that? Someone said that. I thought. Yeah, okay. I don't remember who it is, and now you're afraid I'm going to ask you another question and put you on the spot, so no one would. Oh, she left. Okay, all right. How am I going to teach it? It becomes easy for me as a teacher to think, okay, here's the material. I give the lecture. Now it's done. They should have it, right? But if I want to teach effectively, if I want them to really understand it, to live it out in their life, I'm going to have variety. A couple of you have already mentioned the challenge of just keeping them from being bored, keeping them from wandering off. Probably most of our students, upper elementary, certainly the young children, the kindergartners, they are not going to listen to you give a 45-minute Sunday school lecture and stay involved. So activities, and one of the things with that curriculum I think you have to do is to figure out what are the half a dozen different things I can do in this lesson to teach that. Reading it, maybe some lecture. The last time I did this, I was talking to some junior high teachers, and I said, you know, ask your class, what does a wise eighth grader act like, which is somewhat of what you said. What does a wise child look like? What other activities could you have for your classes that would help them to understand Proverbs 1, wisdom? Okay, examples of actions. Periods of silence for them to think, what is wisdom? At whatever level, and obviously we are ranging from college teachers to preschool here, but at the level of your students, a variety of activities that will connect at their level, this is what how they can learn what it means to be a wise person. I probably picked a bad example here or a difficult example. Evaluation. How will I know if they've learned this? How will I know that they walk away knowing what it means to be wise? As an older student, perhaps, they will have examples of wise people from the Bible, some examples of foolish people from the Bible. And I think even your younger students could come up with some examples of that. How will I evaluate what they have done? If I'm going to teach effectively, I'm going to have to walk into the classroom with a good plan. This is what we're going to get accomplished. And I think very often as teachers, I know for me, if I have not prepared well enough that when I walk in, I've planned well enough that I know what's going to go on, I'm going to have a bad class. And I'm going to leave the classroom very frustrated with who? No, because I'm not going to blame me. I'm going to walk out saying, those students, they don't want to learn. They won't pay attention. Their parents, you know, they've sent them to Bible college, and it's probably just because they wanted to get rid of them, because this is a horrible class. I'm going to be frustrated with the students. But whose fault is it? Yeah, because I didn't walk in prepared. And if I'm not prepared, it's not going to go well. Effective teaching requires good planning, requires a good environment. Now, I thought about this more with traditional classroom, but with a Sunday school class. Setting up your classroom to where it works for teaching. So many times it seems to me we put our students, someone mentioned about the boys, we put our students in a set of rows and we say, now sit there with your hands folded and learn a lot. And they don't. Creating an environment that is good for learning. If you want them to be talking and discussing, put them in a circle to where it's easy for them to do this. I had thought, I wasn't sure what was happening with this class, and I had thought we were going to have just half a dozen or so, and I was going to suggest that maybe we meet in a little room, because I really do want you to do some talking, and fortunately you all have done well with responding, even though we're... But do you understand this setting tends to be the kind of place where I stand here and lecture and you listen, right? If I want my students to get involved, I probably need to create a way to encourage that. This semester I have a class at the college that is a very small class, and it's a subject that I really want a lot of discussion. And I was so happy when I got the class list and saw it was a small class, because we can sit around in a circle, and I have already in just a week found the students respond and talk a whole lot more than they do when I'm, you know, up there, and they're back there, and I'm saying, I want you to talk, and they're afraid to do so. So however your classrooms are set it up to where it is easy for you to accomplish what it is that you're wanting to do. Be organized. Organize your lesson, organize your classroom to where it works well. And then, good teaching requires good classroom management. I had a friend who said this: students cannot learn if they can't hear you. In other words, if they're so busy talking among themselves that they don't know what you're saying, they're not going to learn. I told you that I enjoyed going in and watching teachers, and I also told you I need to be careful not to identify anything, and now my brother here is here who knows even more, so I have to be even more cautious. But a high school teacher once was this teacher wasn't frustrated with his class. He was quite happy with the class. But as principal, I was very frustrated because their test scores were low and in that subject. And when I would walk in, they were just chattering away, and the teacher just was going through a lecture and doing things. But, you know, I would sit in the back and see just all kinds of stuff going on. And finally I said, you know, I don't understand what's happening in your room. Are you happy with all of the conversations and stuff that's going on? And the teacher said, oh, yeah, that's fine with me. I said, why? He said, well, I want the students to be involved. And so, you know, as long as they're busy doing something, that's good. They're not bored. And I said, but they're not doing anything related to what you're teaching. This teacher apparently did not quite get it, that they can't learn if they can't hear you. Even as Sunday school teachers, and again, I understand you're in a different environment where you can't simply, you know, have a set of rules and send them to the principal. But I think it becomes very important that you set a standard that they understand. This is what we're here to learn. This is what we're here to do. And this is kind of what our sister said here is, when your first goal was, I want them to like me and have fun, it was pretty rough, right? You didn't have fun, and probably they didn't. When you created some structure, now you can enjoy it. Now they can enjoy it. And you're accomplishing something. Your example was wonderful for what we're talking about here. Stop the trouble before it starts. For your Sunday school, what time does your Sunday school class start? 11:40. So it's after service. Okay, that may affect what I was going to say here then. Are you able to get to your room before the students? Yes. Okay, good. Be there, be early, be ready, so that when they come in, everything is structured and orderly. If you walk into a room and it's already chaos, what's the first thing you're doing as a teacher? You are a brother here. You said you teach in a college, right?
Put off the fire.
Yeah, okay. You teach in a college, you said. Yes, okay. So if you walk into this college classroom and it's already chaos, what's the first thing you have to do?
Shut up and sit down.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Shut up and sit down. What kind of atmosphere do you have in that classroom from minute one? A negative one, right? Setting the atmosphere for learning from the beginning. Back to when I was watching the elementary teachers. The ones who I found to be so effective were the ones that knew how to get the day started well. I had one teacher who, it didn't matter when I walked in, was always, everything was organized, moving well. And one day I was in her classroom before the class started. I was there when the students got there, and I was just sitting in the back watching them come in. Every one of them walked in the door, went to a little file, pulled out a paper, sat down and started doing it. When the bell rang, her whole class was already at work, organized. And I said, you know, how do you do this? Well, you know, what did you do? And she said, I got so tired of the bell rings and then, and yeah, you don't use those words, but sit down and shut up. She said, I don't want my day to start that way. And so she said, I found some enjoyable activities for them. If they come in, they start on them. And when the bell rings, they're already controlled and engaged, involved, and now it's easy for us to move into a day of learning. Set an environment that makes that easy. High expectations from them so that they know we really are here to learn. This is what we're about, and we're going to accomplish it. And to do that, you have to have high expectations for them. And then you have to push them to achieve it. One of my favorite books from the New Testament is Philemon. That little letter where Paul writes to Philemon on behalf of a runaway slave. The runaway Onesimus has become a Christian. He now is going home, and Philemon has the right to have him killed. And Paul writes this letter to plead on behalf of Philemon, or on behalf of Onesimus. And it's a beautiful, beautiful letter of appeal. But one of my favorite spots is at the end of the letter. He has said to him, to Philemon, I hope that you will receive him not as a slave, but as your brother. I hope you will welcome him back as your brother in Christ. He said to him, if he owes you anything, put it on my bill and I'll pay it. And I won't even mention that you owe me your very soul. He's done all this. And then he closes the letter this way. He says, please pray that I'll be released from prison and be able to come visit you. And when I read that letter and I come to that, I think, now Philemon gets this letter. And after being asked to do this, Paul is saying, what? When I get out of prison, where am I coming?
I'll check on you.
I'll be checking. when I get to your house, who do I expect to see? Onesimus. And I expect Onesimus to tell me how wonderful you have been in treating him. It seems to me that what Paul is doing there very subtly is saying, here are my expectations, and I'll be checking on you. Now, for Sunday school teachers, one of the challenges, it seems to me, is we have to have rules. And as a Sunday school class, we would love to have, as our sisters already told us, it just to be great fun and enjoyment. And yet, if you're going to have an environment where they learn, you're going to have some rules, some structure, some discipline. As teachers, I think probably one of the things we have to learn early on is that teaching is not a popularity contest. The goal is not to be their best buddy. I told you about my teacher at another school, Tony, who was the only teacher I ever had who got punched in the nose by a student. And his goal at the beginning of the year had been what? I just want to be their friend. And it didn't go well. I should finish that story. Tony did learn the lesson. And he realized, you know, this is not the way to handle this. He made dramatic changes in his teaching. And when I left that school, it's been now 20-something years ago, but when I left that school to move to Florida, he became the principal of the school. And I was so, you know, to me that was a great accomplishment, to go from being punched in the nose by one of your students to being the principal. Seemed like he had made some remarkable progress. But here was the key. He came into that year as a new teacher determined, I'm going to be the friend of these junior high students. At some point, he had to learn, I've got to have control. I've got to have discipline. Once he had that, those students actually liked him. They enjoyed being in his class to the point where when that school board was looking for a principal, they said, here's a teacher that the students respect, but they also enjoy. Let's put him in charge. So we need rules. Rules give the student structure. They give them security. The fact is, students may complain about rules, but they want them. They know innately that there is something of security about knowing, here are the boundaries. Proverbs tells us, children are naturally sinners. Right? One of the things as Christians we ought to start with in our understanding of teaching is children are sinners. One of my former students just had a baby last week, 2 weeks ago, and my wife was going to visit and see the baby, and I said, you want me to go along? No, don't go with me. And I laughed. I said, why not? She said, because I know what you'll do. What will you? She said, you'll do what you always do when you see a baby. You'll look at it and say, yep, it's a sinner. She said, you shouldn't do that. It makes the mothers feel bad. And I said, well, you know, I just, that's it's biblical. What can I say? It's a sinner. Yes, but you really need not to tell them. I said, well, you know, I want to be faithful. I want to help them and teach them the truth. But in all seriousness, as teachers, we have to understand that. Children are not naturally good, headed in the right direction. They are naturally bad, headed in the wrong direction. Our culture says the opposite. Our world around us says the opposite, but the biblical truth is they are naturally sinners. And as teachers, we have to create a discipline that creates a structure for learning that then has the goal of creating, building self-discipline in them to where they are prepared, where they begin to be transformed and discipline themselves. It seems to me that with our rules, we have to build relationship. One of my favorite Old Testament scriptures is Deuteronomy chapter 6. Turn to that. Deuteronomy 6. Someone, please read verses 5 and 6.
And thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thine heart and with all thy soul and with all thy mind. And these words which I command thee this day shall be in thine heart.
And let's do one more verse. Yes.
And thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children, and shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thine house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up.
I love this scripture because this comes in the middle or in the early part of Deuteronomy. And what is Deuteronomy primarily?
The law.
Law. It's a review of the Mosaic law. He is going through before they go into Canaan. This is the law. This is what God requires. And very often when we think of law, now you will get the right answer because we've talked about this in a previous year in this Bible study. But when we think of the law, very often people think of what? Rules, fear, negative, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. The policeman will catch you. But when Moses thinks of law, what does he think of? God's love. He wants Israel to associate the law with this. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might. And these words that I command will be in your heart. And you'll teach them to your children. Things, he said back in verse 3, will go well with you. Why? Because as you observe this law, you will, and as you grow in your relationship with the God who gave the law, that love is going to grow. Your relationship is going to grow. The law for Israel was never supposed to be this negative, frightening set of rules. It was the reflection of a relationship of love with a God who loved them enough to say, this is how you walk. As parents, which way do we do better at showing our love to our children? If we say to our children, now, Johnny, I love you. And so because I love you, there's not going to be any rules. You just do what you want to because I love you. Or, Johnny, I love you. And because I love you, and I don't want you to get in trouble, and I want to shape your character, here are the rules that you're going to follow out of that relationship of love. Which of those two is really loving your child? The second one. You don't love your child. Proverbs says you destroy your child. You hate your child if you don't discipline them. Our rules have to be, and whether it's in a classroom, some of you teaching in a classroom, or whether it's in a Sunday school class, our rules have to be a reflection of relationship. Along with our rules, there must be respect. One of the writers I used to love to read talked about in discipline, catch them doing something right. Look for the child doing something right and be aware of that. Building responsibility. The goal for our discipline, the goal for our rules, is to build self-discipline. C.S. Lewis used to say, integrity is doing the right thing when no one is looking. And the goal of our rules is not simply a set of rules for right now, but building in the student the kind of self-control and self-discipline that will guide them in developing their character and moving through life. Your rules, and especially this would be true of Sunday school class, need to be few. You know, for kids to walk into a Sunday school class and there's a list of 25 rules on the wall is probably going to be pretty discouraging. But a few rules that cover the essentials of how you need your classroom to work, something that is clear. I always found it frustrating if a teacher's rule was something like, don't be too noisy. Because, and that one actually came out of real life. Don't be too noisy. I can almost guarantee you that what the teacher defines as too noisy and what the students define as too noisy will be two different things. Few rules, clear rules, and then I use the word measurable. I don't know that that's the best term here. But it needs to be clear. This is the result if you don't follow the rules. As a teacher, they break the rule, and you say, if you do that again, I'm going to whatever. They do it again. If you do that one more time, I'm going to whatever. They do it again. This is the last time. What are you teaching them? For one thing, you're teaching them they can't trust you. Because you don't do what you tell them you're going to do. As parents, we do such a terrible disservice to our children when we teach our children that we don't really mean it. I have found that sometimes children or students learn this. Teacher's in a bad mood. And so when you break the rule, what happens? You get punished. Another day, the teacher's in a good mood. You break the rule, and she says, well, you know, it's okay. What have the students learned?
They learn to know when to make it.
Yeah.
Without getting tense.
Yeah. They've learned that discipline is simply a matter of the teacher's mood, right? It's not about discipline. It's simply about the mood. They need, and back to security, they need the security of knowing this is how my classroom works. This is how we do, because we're here to learn, we're here to accomplish something, and the way that's going to happen is by following these guidelines, and they need to understand that and know this is how it will work. In your classroom, be consistent. The better you are at this consistency to where they know this is how it works every week, the easier it becomes. When they don't know what's going to happen, there's this insecurity. So be consistent. Be fair, but be consistent. Be willing to change if it's not working. We started, I asked you to give me a list of things, and you gave me a list of about 10 options for dealing with misbehavior in a classroom. And I ask you, how many of them will work in every situation? And the answer was none. All of you had good ideas, but none of those ideas will work every single time. And so be willing to change when it doesn't work. The teacher that did so well with Michael I was telling you about, the key for her success with him, and by the way, this went all year. I told you about the duct tape. I walked in another time, and Michael was in the very back corner of the room. This normally I don't recommend, but he was over there where that trash can is, with his desk turned towards the wall. And I thought, uh-oh. He blew it. He got in trouble. Tomorrow he'll probably be in my office. I said, what'd Michael do? Nothing. I said, is he in trouble? No. I said, but he's facing the wall. She said, I asked him, you know, what would help him not to get... Understand, by the way, he has serious emotional, you know, relational issues. And he said, if I didn't see the other students, I wouldn't get distracted. So she said, I asked him, would you like to face the wall in the back of the room? Can I? And she said, I told him, as long as you keep the rules, as long as you don't disrupt, you can do that. very few teachers, I certainly would not have thought of allowing a student to, you know, just kind of go back. He did well. 3, 4, 5 weeks later, I go back and guess where he's sitting? Front row. Because this wore off and he started to disrupt. But do you understand what she was doing? She was creative enough to be willing to change, to look for what works. Now, you can look at that second one and say, wait a minute, that doesn't match the first one. Be consistent. Understand that being consistent does not mean unchanging. But here's the goal. Here's what I'm going to accomplish. And there may be different routes to getting that. You understand? I teach piano. Sometimes I teach piano. Sometimes I try to teach piano. And this past week was the first week after Christmas vacation. A lesson that everyone always dreads. Because what have the students done during Christmas vacation? Nothing. Exactly. There are a few exceptions. I had a few who really did a lot during Christmas, but usually none. And there was, I have a junior high girl who usually does pretty well, but on occasion she doesn't. And Caitlin came to her lesson this week, and I could tell when she walked in, she was just scared to death. She just, you know. And I said, how are you, Caitlin? I'm okay. I said, what am I supposed to ask next? Did I practice? I said, I'm not going to ask you if you practice this. You're not? No. Why? I said, because I already know the answer is going to be no. And you're going to feel bad. And then, you know, it's my job to yell at you about not practicing. And it was Christmas. I know you're not going to practice. I know you didn't practice, so we'll just skip that question. But if you don't practice this week, I'm going to whack you in the head with a hammer. I have a little wooden hammer. Am I consistent? I think so. I expect practice, and I check on it. But am I willing to change? Yeah. Depending on the situation, I need to be flexible. So be consistent, but be flexible. And then, and this is a lesson that I have learned from painful experience, never discipline without listening to them first. I was principal, and one of the rules at the academy where I was you could not walk on the grass. Well, that's fairly common. You can't walk on the grass. So I look out the door one day, and there is a whole group of junior high kids just running, for all they're worth, right down the grass in front of the, you know, the sidewalks here. They're running over here. And I hollered at my secretary, who was close to them, and I said, tell them to get on the sidewalk. She said, no, you don't want them on the sidewalk. I said, what's going on? So I go charging out there, and somebody, I still don't ever, never did figure out what happened, but some nut had run off the road and was coming down the sidewalk, and these kids are, you know, on the grass. And I said, yeah, this is a chance where we don't enforce the rules. But listen before you discipline. Last semester, in my classes, I have a rule that there's no texting, no, you know, electronic stuff during my class. It's a college class. I want them to learn. And there's this girl who sits on the front row, would never cause any trouble. And I'm lecturing, and I look up, and she has got this text, her phone out, and she's looking at this text. And in a minute, she starts to answer. I said, Katie, what are you doing? And she said, please let me tell you after class. And I thought, you know, there's something wrong, and I better not make it. And normally I would, you know, normally I would just take it. And after class, she came to me in tears. She said, I know your rule. And she said, I am so sorry. But she said, I got a text during class that my aunt died. And I had to say something to my mom. And I thought, you know, if I had, as I would be prone to do when I started teaching, I told you no texting. What are you doing? You think how embarrassed I would have been when I found out that, you know, she had this tragedy that she just finds out about and comes to class in that situation. So listen to the students. Avoid public confrontation. If a couple of you said this when we were passing ideas around at the beginning, but if there is a discipline problem, try to handle it privately rather than a public confrontation. Jeremiah 10 tells us not to discipline in anger. Very often, it will do us a lot of good if we will just take time to breathe, give some time for quiet, and then see the student afterwards. Because if it's a student who wants to do well, embarrassing them doesn't help. And if it's a student who is trying to create a confrontation, who wants to be a problem, what happens when we confront them? We've accomplished their objective for them, haven't we? So avoid public confrontation. Understand that attitude is as important as behavior. Deal with more than just what are they doing, but deal with the root of who they are. And then always ask, what is for the good of the child? Not what do they like, but what is for their good? How am I building their character? How am I shaping them into who God wants them to be? As teachers, you have this wonderful, wonderful opportunity, especially with your trouble students. Don't call out any names here, please. But for each of you who teach, do you have one student that comes to mind immediately if I talk about a problem student? Someone who just frustrates you constantly. Now, again, please don't call out any names, but some of you, probably immediately a name comes to mind. Would you agree with me that probably that student comes from, has great challenges and problems that's causing them to be that kind of problem student? And as a teacher, you get the wonderful, wonderful privilege to shape them, to touch them in that difficulty. The boy that I mentioned that one of our teachers did so well, I told you every year he had been in trouble. Academically had struggled, reading had struggled. But somehow this teacher was able to do a wonderful, wonderful work with him. He came from a family that just a horrible background problems. 3 years later, we do a spelling bee every year. 3 years later, he won first place in our school spelling bee and went to the regional spelling bee for his level and won. I have probably never been as excited about a student winning that as for Michael to win. Because he comes out of a background he should not even read, you know, if you understood his background. And the truth of the matter is, if he had not bumped into this teacher, he probably wouldn't. And he'd probably ended up expelled from school. But God brought this teacher and this problem student together. And she was able to see the potential there and truly transformed Michael's life. That's been 6 years. I'm not principal of the academy anymore, so I teach in a college. But the other day I was walking across campus, and I see this. Now he's big. He's a big guy. And I see him, and he says, Dr. McElwain, do you remember me? And I walked over. I said, Michael, what are you doing? He's in high school and is just doing wonderful. Why? Because God worked through a teacher to transform his life and change his direction. How many of you know D.L. Moody, the name D.L. Moody? Raise your hand if you recognize the name D.L. Moody. Okay, several of you. All right. Fifth grade education, but became a great preacher. They say he preached to more than 100 million people. He founded the school that became Moody Bible College, Moody Bible Institute, founded what became Moody Press, inspired hundreds of missionaries, including the Cambridge Seven that went to China under Hudson Taylor. Great evangelist. And at least quite a few of you know him. How many of you know the name Edward Kimball? Okay. A couple of you have made that connection. Very few are going to recognize Edward Kimball because Edward Kimball, as far as I know, never did anything except, that's remembered, except he was a Sunday school teacher. A Sunday school teacher who visited D.L. Moody, taught him in Sunday school, went to visit him, and led him to Christ. D.L. Moody became an evangelist. One of the young college students who came to his crusades was a man by the name of Wilbur Chapman. Moody worked with Chapman. Chapman became a Christian and an evangelist. Chapman became an evangelist and was preaching in Chicago and met a professional ball player named Billy Sunday. Worked with him. Billy Sunday became an evangelist. Preached, and one of his converts was a man by the name of Mordecai Ham, who became a Christian, an evangelist, rather a bizarre preacher. His biography is full of all kinds of strange things. He was a rather odd preacher. But he preached a crusade in Charlotte, North Carolina, and a group of high school students went to disrupt the crusade. And one of the high school students who went was named Billy Graham, who went back the next night, and the next night became a Christian. And they say has preached to more people than anyone in history. And while I'm not going to say, this is because of this, is because of this, the fact is, a lot of that you can trace back to a Sunday school teacher who, as far as I know, never did anything else of any, great importance. And yet he leads this 18-year-old boy to Christ. And that 18-year-old boy is one in a chain that God worked through to accomplish his purpose. I say that to say this. As teachers, whether it's in Sunday school or in a class or in your home, you have the wonderful opportunity to influence people for God's kingdom. I say it not as a sort of guilt trip that if you don't do your job well, God's kingdom won't get built. Okay, I used to think that way. I would read a story like this and think, oh man, if Edward Kimball hadn't done what he was supposed to do, how would D.L. Moody have ever gotten? I don't worry about those things now because I understand that God is going to accomplish his purpose with or without me. However, if I'm not in the place where he can use me, I won't get the incredible joy of being part of that. If Edward Kimball had not done his responsibility, I'm convinced that God somehow is going to still build his kingdom. But do you understand what a joy it must be to Edward Kimball as he sees what God did through a nobody? He says, wow, God let me have a part in that. And as teachers, as Sunday school teachers, working in children's church, whatever you're doing, you have the incredible opportunity to come alongside and be a part of what God is doing. Ah. And for me, the joy of teaching, the joy of being involved in education is this. That when you look at that classroom, you have no idea what the potential is. There was no, you know, sign over D.L. Moody's head when he sat in Sunday school that said, make sure you reach this one because he's going to be a great evangelist. He looked like what? All the others, right? And yet there was incredible potential there. And as you work with the student that God sends to you, some days it may be thrilling, many days it's not. And one of the things I realize as I talk to teachers, you can put together something like this and you can look at someone like Edward Kimball and you can think, wow, you know, teaching is just going to be a barrel of fun. Most days, you will not lead a D.L. Moody to Christ in your class. Right? Most days that won't happen. And if it did, you wouldn't know it. You know, you're not going to know that they're the D.L. Moody. But here's the thing. As you are faithful day after day after day, God is working through you to shape those children. That preschool child that you're not sure if they understand anything, a little nugget of it prepares them for the five-year-old class. And in the five-year-old class, you get to see a little bit of that develop, but not a whole lot. But there's a foundation, and they're ready to go to the elementary class, the upper elementary class, and the junior high. And as that happens, God is working little piece by little piece. And you never know which part of what you have said will stick. But as you're faithful to prepare, as you're faithful to go to that class week after week, prepared, organized, and pour yourself into those students, as you do the hard work of discipline, of shaping them when they don't want to be shaped, you lay a foundation for God to do wonderful things. And through that, he builds his church. And through that, he builds the next generation of his church. And someday you can look back and see, this is what God has done. This is what God has done through your teaching and through what you have done. Over the next couple months, what I want to do is look at I tried just to kind of do an overview this morning or this afternoon. Over the next couple months, I want to look at some just foundational principles of this is what we do as teachers. This is how we should approach teaching. If you have practical kinds of questions of how do you do this particular thing, let me know that. And some of them perhaps we can work in. We have such a range here, and I'm not going to try to, for one thing, I don't know how you teach preschoolers. As I said, they're all scared of me. I'm not going to look at all of those nitty-gritty things, but if you have specific issues or specific scenarios, that'll give us some help in knowing how to work. So please share that with me, and I'll be happy for us to talk about it. All right, let's finish with prayer, and then we're dismissed. I'll turn it back to you. Dear God, I thank you for the teachers who give their time week after week here at the Palm Beach Church. Thank you for the teachers in this group that work in some of the area colleges and schools. Thank you for their desire to serve you and to be used by you for their students. And I pray that you will work through them. Your word says that our students, when they're fully trained, will be like their teacher. So would you make us people who are what we need to be so that our students, as they follow us and as they model after us, that we will guide them to you. Make us the kind of people that we should be, and then help us to shape